Hey, this is Mike, co-founder of the Bronx Brand and executive producer of Creative Hustle. Thanks for listening.
Look, I've been waiting so long for recognition. Keep my head above water, causing friction. Maybe I could be the one that you could spit. Maybe I could be the one to make you care. Please pass me the light, cause my L not lit. How the fuck you hustle, but you ain't got shit.
Yo, what it do? It's Josh DWH, straight from the Bronx, here with another episode of the Creative Hustle Podcast, where we highlight Bronx talent. Today, we have a special guest, a filmmaker from the Bronx. He goes by the name of Zef. Please introduce yourself, my friend.
How are you guys doing? It's good to be here. My name's Zef. I run a company called Alphabet City Films, and we're based in the Bronx.
What part of the Bronx are you from?
I'm originally from Pelham Parkway, but right now we're based in the South Bronx, right across the street from the Third Avenue Bridge. That's where our studio is.
That's Mott Haven, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, dope. Yeah, we have a studio that I record over there. So how did you get into filmmaking?
So it's an unusual sort of path that I did because I didn't quite go to school for filmmaking, but I was always into it. And I started my own welding ironwork business when I was in my early 20s. And we used to do work all over the Bronx. And we were based at that time on Arthur Avenue. And then one day I had a crazy idea that I wanted to stop doing that and pursue filmmaking. To make a long story short.
What age was that?
So that was at the age of 25.
A lot of people, they'd be like, you know, I'm kind of lost at 25. What the hell am I going to do? But that's good though. Like what? So you always had like aspirations to do filmmaking?
Or? Yeah, sort of in the back of my head, they weren't grand aspirations at first. At first I thought it would be really cool to do some short films and, you know, maybe they would be kind of like spoofs and kind of goofy and get some people in the city, some friends of ours together and just get people to kind of laugh at these things that we sort of created. And then I just kind of just went deeper down the rabbit hole of really getting into it, just more and more.
When did you make your first film?
So I made my first short film in 2009.
And what was the duration that you're saying in this short film?
It was about 15 minutes.
Is it, so what host did you use? Like, I know a lot of people use Vimeo and YouTube to upload their films. Like, where did you...
We didn't end up really hosting it. Right now, only the trailer is online, but we just submitted it to different festivals. And what I was doing, actually, at the time is I used to run this short film night in Times Square where I'd show my short films and I'd sort of aggregate other filmmakers, get them to submit some short films. It wasn't paid. There were no submission fees or anything like a traditional film festival, but I just
do a lot of the film festivals have submission fees.
Most of them have submission fees.
It'd be expensive.
Depends, you know, like at Sundance, it might be over $100 for it. But then for some more regional film festivals, it might be just like $20 for a short film. Or
Sundance Film Festival. That's in Brooklyn, right?
That's in Utah. So that's the biggest festival for film in America, and I guess the biggest in the world is the Cannes Film Festival in France. But then there's some more local ones like, you know, Tribeca and the New York Film Festival, and then there's a whole shitload of film festivals nowadays, honestly.
Is that like the, because I don't know anything about filmmaking, is that like where ideally where everyone should put their short films?
It's a good question. That's the traditional route of where people submit their films to and sort of network with other film people and, you know, industry people and connect with audiences. And I do like the idea of people watching films in person. You know, I think it's great. Like platforms like Vimeo and YouTube are great for reaching wider numbers of people and getting more eyeballs on your film. But I do think there's something special about having people sit down in a theater and watching your work and then connecting with it and then seeing it on a giant screen, and then as a filmmaker, you seeing their reactions and that sort of thing.
What was the last film that you went to go see in the movies? Whether it was a big film or a small film?
So it was a small film at a film festival in Las Vegas that we were at for showing our film, but I got, you know, got a chance to support some other filmmakers and watching their films. So I'll give these guys a plug. It was a horror film called Something. And I thought that was really well done.
I thought you forgot the name just now.
No, it's called Something. Yeah, I know, right? It does seem like
that. It was like Something.
It's called Something. Yeah.
And what was it about?
So it's about this couple that has a young baby at home, which also I have a young baby at home. Like, we have two kids, but my wife just had a kid. So I guess I can
congrats,
relate.
Too.
Thank you. Thank you. So what I thought was cool about this film, and I didn't know anything about it going into it. I didn't even know if it was going to be a horror film or whatever. But it was about this couple, and the wife is going through postpartum depression, like, which I guess a lot of new mothers go through when they're having, you know, they have a newborn at home. And I thought it was a dramatic piece. And all of a sudden, like, you know, she's really stressed out. And then she's in the bathroom. She's taking a bath. She puts a towel over her face and she sees some sort of shadowy apparition. And like, she takes the towel off and then nobody's there. Then her husband thinks she's going crazy. She thinks she's going crazy because she's starting to see these different things, these different apparitions. Like, they have this video baby monitor. She sees like a figure going to attack the baby. She runs into the room, nobody's there. Then the husband starts seeing it. So then it's like, are they both going crazy? Are they really seeing something? And then the film kind of ties things together in a really interesting and unique way. And I thought they did a fantastic job, especially on a low budget feature. So I definitely recommend that one.
How much does it usually take, like, to shoot a short film? Like, let's say the duration is like 15 minutes. Like, what is that, like, an ideal budget that filmmakers go into it with?
I mean, you could have anywhere from a few thousand dollars, which is around what we spent. And I think I'm pretty good at stretching out a budget. But I've heard of, like, kids at NYU spending like 50 grand. On a short film, which is crazy to me, honestly. It's mind-blowing, but that's, you know, my mentality is make a feature if you have that kind of money to throw around.
Yeah. And when you say feature, what you mean?
Just a feature-length film. So there's short
like
film.
A whole,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Like a whole, like, long movie that's usually around, you know, short films are usually 20 minutes or less. On a very technical level, anything under 45 minutes is a short film. Then anything over 45 minutes is considered a feature.
That's dope. What was your favorite movie growing up?
The Godfather Part 2.
Why Part 2?
I just thought it was although I love The Godfather Part 1, the original Godfather, I just think Part 2, the way it flashes back between Michael Corleone and the young Vito Corleone, played by Robert De Niro. So between Al Pacino's character kind of ascending to new heights of power, and then the origin story, those intercut, that parallel editing, I just thought was really interesting and intriguing.
I feel like some people just they bypass, you know, how great that film is because of how long it is. I feel,
yeah, there's some, like, people that haven't, yeah, given
it, they just chance. Don't have the attention span to just sit down and
to
just watch that whole thing,
it,
you know what I'm saying, especially from old movies. Do you feel like modern day, like, you feel like now films have depreciated or they've grown in value, like, when it comes to the content? Like, I feel like they've depreciated.
I think so too. I gotta say, I think they probably have depreciated only because there's so many films now compared to
before. I feel like nothing new is, like, it's nothing new under the sun. It's just like, it's very small creativity space you have to work with.
I think people aren't pushing the envelope as much as they did in the past. And, you know, I mean, that's something I'm interested in doing, is taking the cinematic form and pushing the envelope with each project.
Who's a director that inspired you?
Stanley Kubrick.
What films did he do?
He did A Clockwork Orange, 2001 A Space Odyssey, Paths of Glory, The Shining.
The Shining, okay. Now we're talking, okay. I'm a big horror movie buff myself, so.
Nice.
Why Stanley Kubrick?
I think he was a really interesting director. Also, on a side note, he was from the Bronx originally. A lot of people associate him with being from England because he lived in England for most of his life, but he was originally from the Bronx. But I think he was an interesting director because if you watch a movie like The Shining, on the surface level, it's an entertaining horror film with Jack Nicholson. But if you watch it over and over again, there's just so much more going on and so much more.
Yeah, you just got to pay attention to the details.
Exactly, yeah. But I think he kind of struck a chord in both ways, like where it was entertaining films, but also a lot more that's what's going on just than what meets the eye.
What would you say is the pros of independent filmmaking?
I think the pros of independent filmmaking is that you don't have to take notes from a major studio telling you how to create your work. You could just create it the way that you want to and then release it in the way that you want to, instead of being forced in a mold of like having some marketing executive saying, oh, well, we got to change the ending to make it this way because that's what, you know, the quadrant four target market is going to respond to, you know, some shit like that.
Yeah.
So I think it's just, you have more freedom as an independent filmmaker.
And what would you say are the cons?
The cons are, I think, you know, budgetary restrictions, that, you know, it would be nice to have that studio money to make films.
When you say studio money, like, would you say that, like, just the budget, basically, like, and what did you say? Would you say resources, too, or?
Mostly, I guess,
going about getting a good cast.
I feel, that's true. That's a good point. But I do think that once you have that budget, but no matter where it came from, you inherently then have those resources. Because if you have a $100 million budget, you can start talking to any actor that you want to.
Yeah. And, what would you say was one of the biggest run-ins that you had with filmmaking? What was one of the biggest run-ins that you had?
One of the biggest challenges?
Yeah.
I would say you never have enough time, it feels like. You know, you're trying to squeeze in so much in so little time that I think that's kind of a challenge, trying to get what you want in the amount of time that you kind of have allotted for it.
How many, so when you go into making a film, how many hours in a day would you work on it? Like recording and, cause when you're making film, you gotta put the audio separate from, the actual, movie, no?
Right, right. We did record, there's different ways of doing it, but I would say the most professional way is to record it separately, because then you have a dedicated sound person that, you know, we had a great sound guy, this guy, Nick Doe, that was, he had just carts of gear that, you know, with the boom mic and the wireless lapels and, you know, state-of-the-art gear that was recording stuff separately. But to answer your question on the amount of time, we consciously, my producer George Rudai, me and George kind of consciously had the idea of keeping our days kind of like 8-hour days, you know.
It's like a 9-to-5, basically.
Yeah, basically, because a lot of independent filmmakers, they might try to say like, all right, we're gonna shoot 12-to-16-hour days just to squeeze in more things,
yeah.
Which you could do that, and some days certainly we went longer. But if you do that every single day, then the actors are going to get tired. The crew is going to kind of get a little bit more restless. So it kind of brings the morale down. So we purposely try to keep the days shorter and just to, you know, not overexert our crew and cast.
How do you go about casting?
So we held
as an independent. I know. You know, some people post ads and stuff like that.
Yeah, we did that too. So we held auditions. A few of the roles were actors that I've worked with before on my short films. But a lot of the roles, then we posted casting notices. There's different websites that you could do. You know, like there's like New York Castings. There's a few different resources. And then we had people come in for auditions.
So, how, I just had the questions popped out of my head. What was the first film that you made?
So the first one that I made officially was called Black Cherry Cheesecake in 2009, which I mentioned before. So that was my first official one. But I used to be the type of kid that whenever I needed to do, instead of doing like a report in school, I'd always opt to do the video. Yeah. And so then I found, like, when I was like 12 years old, that I was figuring out how to make title sequences and add music and stuff like that for like making a video for Spanish class or something, yeah. You know, and I would spend more time doing that, like making like the titles really cool and adding the music than.
No, the fonts are very important and yeah. All that shit.
Like I was really
captures the eye.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And so I just found myself being really interested in that. And so I think that was, you know, and then just filming like these like home movies at home, like with my brother or whatever, you know, like
you use the camcorder.
Yeah, using a camcorder because my dad gave me a Hi8 camcorder, a Sony cam, when I was like 12 years old, and I was just found myself filming everything, you know. So
you feel like
that's how I kind of got into it.
You feel like you could shoot a movie off iPhone.
You could definitely shoot a movie off an iPhone.
Just off the angles, and like you got to make sure you got the right angles and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, Steven Soderbergh, the director of Ocean's 11, and
he's Ocean's 11.
Yeah, he's a major movie director, and he just shot a movie on an iPhone.
Did you see it?
I didn't see it yet, but I've heard good things, so
yeah.
I'll check it out. You know,
nah, that's dope. What Mike was telling me about, you have a film called Trouble.
The Trouble, yeah.
What is that about?
So that is
my. And that's not released yet, right?
It's about to be released, but it's not quite released yet. We just premiered it at the Action On Film Festival.
Oh.
In Las Vegas. So it was pretty well received out there. But it's about this guy who's a geek named Billy, who basically, or people assume that he's a geek at least, and he's involved with playing poker online, but all of his favorite websites get shut down, and so then he starts playing at these in-person poker games, at like these underground poker games, where he's totally a fish out of water. And this thug named Enzo extorts Billy and his girlfriend Marisol. So Billy hires this hitman named Pitt. Pitt's sort of a hitman slash private detective of the street sort of guy, mysterious sort of character, and it just kind of gets him into a deeper situation. So,
you know, and that's the whole plot right there.
Yeah, basically that's where things start to pop off from there.
And how long is the duration of that?
It's just under 90 minutes. So almost about an hour and a half.
How long did it take you to film?
About a year and a half. Not continuously. We shot for about almost 20 days at first. And then about another 10 days of sporadic pickup shoots and some reshoots for the rest of the time.
And when you go about shooting, like, do you have, like, let's say you're shooting in a public place, like, most of the scenes are outside, clearly.
A lot of them,
stuff.
Yeah.
So, like, when you go about filming, like, do you have to reach out to certain places and say, hey, I'm gonna shoot this here, or how does that work?
Well, that's maybe the traditional route of getting permits. And if you don't get permits, it's called stealing a shot.
Yeah.
So we stole a lot of
shots. So if you wanted to shoot like in the street right now, like you would need a permit for that? Like,
technically, yes. Yeah. But we did.
But you come with the big cameras? Like what do you record with that you would need a permit with?
Yeah, it's a good question, because the more things that you have, the more likelihood you're going to get shut down. I mean, not so much just the cameras, but it could be if you have trailers and if you're blocking traffic and things like that.
Yeah.
But we didn't have any of that. We were a pretty small crew, so we were able to kind of run and gun to some extent. And we shot a lot of it in the South Bronx, and I felt that, you know, there's other things to worry about over there. I don't think they were worried about a few people filming a movie.
And when you say permit, the permit, because when it comes to movies, when you're shooting outside, you need the permit, basically, just to allow access, like, so nobody bothers you, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, that's a factor, for sure. They want to make sure that you also have insurance, like liability insurance.
Oh, just in case anybody gets hurt.
Yeah, just in case anybody gets hurt. Then there's also those things of, like, blocking traffic or, like, being able to close off a street or whatever.
How big was the cast for Trouble?
So the cast it centers on four main characters, but then there was maybe another two dozen people that appeared.
Like extras.
Yeah, extras, or they had just like one or a few lines or that sort of thing. So maybe around, actually maybe around like 30, 35-ish people. And then the crew, I like to keep a small crew. On our biggest days, for our biggest like scenes, it would be about 20 people, but then sometimes it would be as little as 5 people if we were just filming with a couple of the actors and we're filming insert shots and things like that.
Now, when you go about shooting, because you had told me that, you know, some budgets be high, some budgets are low, being that you would invest, you know, a couple thousand into a film, how does it go about with you making money, like, back? Like, how does that go about? Like, do you see, like, close to anything that you put in, or...
Yeah, no, it's a good
question.
Is it
more of a... More of... Because me, personally, I do music, and, you know, I know for a fact, like, you know, being that it's not too many creatives out here that, you know, do filmmaking and music, like, you got to pay for the studio time, you got to pay for the...
Sure.
For the cast, like... would you say that the turnaround is greater, or some of it is just devalued, like the money
depends.
Coming back in?
It really depends, but I think it just depends on the project. But I think on this project, the whole way you make money back on an independent film is getting a distribution deal. So you get investors up front, or you... In our case, we pooled my money and the other two producers, George Rudai and this guy Joel Martinez, who was the executive producer. We pooled money together, different amounts, and basically made the film happen. And then the idea now is to land a distribution deal, and hopefully we turn a profit from it. But I think over time it will. Sometimes it takes some time.
Yeah. So when you say distribution deal, when you get a distribution deal, what, like, you basically sign over what, basically? Like, so for independent filmmakers that, you know, may be listening to this, is it key for them to get a distribution deal?
Or? Oh, yeah, I think for sure. Whether they get a distribution deal from a traditional distribution company or they self-distribute, which I think is the same situation in the music industry.
Yeah, it's basically hand in hand, basically, yeah. What you're saying. Because as artists, you know, we would want a distribution deal just to help out with promo, like, and as I said, like, you may have different connections, like, tied into that, you know
exactly,
what I'm saying?
Yeah. So, you know, you'd work with a distribution company that, let's say, would pay for the rights of the movie for a specified amount of time to basically, let's say, exhibit the film, show it in North America, Asia, Europe, you know, that sort of thing. You know, sometimes you work with different companies, one for domestic distribution and then one for worldwide distribution, or you could work with what's called a foreign sales agent to kind of license your film by territories. So there's different ways. Or then you could self-distribute, you know, with by putting it out there. Like there's different platforms on Vimeo or whatever, or even iTunes, where people could then buy your movie.
And when you put it on, let's say, YouTube, and you say you can put it on iTunes. I know iTunes for music, you get, you know, a majority of the profit. How does that work out with films? Like, let's say I buy the film for, like, what, like, how much would it go usually for on iTunes?
Well, let's say, like, you rent the film for $5 and somebody could buy it for 15, the digital copy. I'm just throwing out examples,
right? Yeah.
If you're self-distributing, then you get most of that money. But then if you're working with a distributor, then it just depends on the kind of deal that they work out. They might give you all the money up front to license it, and then, or they might give you a small amount of money or percentages of the film per how much it sells. It just really depends on what kind of deal you make.
Have you ever had any of your films overseas?
No, not really. Not yet, anyways. But this is my first feature film, so, you know, I have a feeling this one will go overseas, so That's the plan.
I feel like manifestation is a big thing. You got to go into it with like such an attitude. I feel like half of the time, you know, people go into things with a, you know, a fuck it attitude, and then they get a fuck it result. But I feel like if you go into things with a great feeling, like, yo, I'm very confident about this film, I feel like you'll get, you know, just that back. You know what I'm saying?
I agree. No, I believe. I always say that when you're making a film, you have to will it into existence. You have to believe in it so strongly that that's when it's going to happen. You know, so I think it's probably the same with everything else.
Are there some days like when, so how many, before I ask that question, how many films would you say you've made over the years?
So I made 8 short films, and I made this feature length film now, and then I've done a bunch of projects
so
in between that.
Definitely put in the 10,000 hours in there.
I would say so.
Definitely. Yeah. What keeps you, you know, what keeps you going? Like, what are you going for at the end result?
Now I think I'm at the point of no return. Yeah. I think because I put in so many hours.
It's like, this shit gotta work.
I can't go back now.
I feel you.
So now it's my profession, really.
So what is the end goal for Zeph? Like, what are you aiming for, like, with all the films? Like,
well, I think film is still a great medium to connect with people. And what I think is cool about film is that different audiences and different types of people from different places, they could watch a movie and experience it and connect with it, maybe even in different ways, you know? But they do connect with it. And I just think that's something for me that's interesting. You know, I want to keep that going. I think I just really enjoy not just the process, but the end result of when people are sitting down in a theater and, you know, especially when you're screening it at a festival or something, or people that you don't even know are like, wow, I watched your film. I really liked it. And they're not just saying that to be nice, because they don't
just
even
saying
know
that because they actually
really
like
enjoyed it.
It.
And so so that's something that's pretty rewarding.
Yeah. So fuck the money, basically.
You can't do it just for the money. You might as well become like a stockbroker or something, yeah. You know, because filmmaking is definitely not a surefire way to make money. You know, it's probably one of the slowest routes of making money. Maybe it's like being a musician. It's similar, you know? I mean, but you gotta do it for the passion.
You can't just
be a musician for the money.
I feel like, you know, a lot of things get oversaturated, basically, and, you know, I feel like you could really differentiate, you know, who's doing things for what, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so that's why
sure.
I asked, like, if you're doing it for the money, because I feel like, you know, a lot of people, they either settle or they shortchange themselves 9 times out of 10. So it's just like, you know, what do you really, I'm glad that you said that, because it's basically like the same thing with my music. Like, when people come up to me and they're just like, yo, like, I really like your stuff. And I'm just like, thank you, man. That's what I'm doing it for.
Yeah, for sure.
So, so you said you made 8 films. And 1 feature, right? Which one would you say was your favorite to work on?
I would say The Trouble was my favorite film to work on, because I feel like as a filmmaker, you're sort of a virgin until you make a feature film.
Yeah.
You know, like, you make shorts and, you know, it's fun and it's a good dry run, but until you've made a feature, until you went through the gauntlet and actually made a feature length film, that's when it's sort of the real deal, you know? So, and it was a great experience, because I think we had a great cast and crew. And I know that sounds cliche and a lot of people will say that. And it's not every day is perfect. That's a piece of advice that I would give to younger filmmakers or anybody that's starting out is
patience.
Patience, and embrace the fact that there's gonna be problems. Part of it is problem solving. Filmmaking is problem solving. So just embrace the fact that there are going to be problems, but just you constantly have to have the mindset of, how am I going to creatively going to resolve those problems, and just keep the train moving forward.
Now, when you run into these problems, do you deal with them yourselves, or do you talk them over with your team most of the time?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you have a team, and I work very closely with my team, but a lot of times you're dealing with it yourself. I mean, there could be something so silly that people don't even think about. Like, there's one time we had a scene where we're shooting on Arthur Avenue. We're shooting at this wine store. It's actually my friend Anthony's wine store. But we were shooting a scene there. One of the main actors came there and his pants were too tight. Like, he was playing the villain and his jeans were skin tight. They were like, whoa, like,
that's not fitting.
It just doesn't fit the character. And we're like, what are we gonna do? I didn't even think about it. I just walked next door, went to a discount store, bought pajama pants. I wore the pajama pants, then gave him my jeans, and then he wore the jeans in the scene. And, you know, like, people were just like, it was like 2 minutes later.
Yeah, you know, think about it though. You gotta act fast because
you gotta act fast because time is money when you're on set. Time is literally money.
And when you shooting these films, what do you use?
Different things, but the format that we shot on was primarily a Blackmagic cinema camera, and we used very high end Cook lenses. So the Blackmagic cinema camera isn't necessarily a high end camera in terms of it's pretty low cost. And I find it to be one of those cameras that if you have a cinematographer that doesn't know what they're doing, it's not going to be a great image. But if you have somebody that's really and truly great, they're going to create an outstanding image. That's probably the case with most cameras. You know, I'm sure on an iPhone, if Steven Soderbergh is directing, it's going to look amazing. But, you know, somebody that's never filmed with an iPhone before, it's going to look like shit.
Yeah. I feel like it's mainly about the edits, I feel like, because I feel like color saturation and all the that edit, shit really makes a difference.
It's like, so important.
Like, it's especially, so important. I feel like especially with music videos too, like, because some people make music videos like as movies, and then like some of the color be off, or like the storyline just don't match. But it's really all about you know, what you're trying to do with it.
I agree for sure.
So you work with a production company. What are some of the things that you guys got coming out for the near future?
So mainly we're focused on getting distribution for The Trouble, and then we're also going into pre-production on our next movie, which unfortunately I can't talk too much about, but I'm really excited about it. So hopefully you guys will have me back on the show once
I can
talk a little bit more about it.
Nah, I wanna watch some of the films. We're almost at the last question, but this is different. What was the moment that she was just like, all right, I wanna get in the game and I want to make my own films? Like, was it just when you were younger, when your pops gave you the camera,
No, I think it was much later. I mean, I had those ideas, you know, but I think maybe because I came from, you know, I'm a first generation American. My family's Albanian immigrants. And Albanians, not that they were discouraging, you know, but it just seemed like they're more practical people, more pragmatic. And it just seemed
play
like...
Play it safe, kind of.
Play it kind of like, yeah, like, you know, play it safe a little bit more in certain ways. So it seemed like filmmaking, nobody ever said, hey, don't chase that. But nobody ever said, oh, yeah, go and do that either. Yeah. You know, no one ever encouraged that sort of thing. So it's a path that I really had to carve out on my own. You know, and there were different supportive people over the years, but I think the point came to be when I was watching this DVD of Spike Jonze, who is the music video director and then turned film director, and he directed a lot of the early Beastie Boys videos and the early Weezer videos in the 1990s, and, you know, he just did great work. But I was watching his work and him talking about filmmaking, I'm like, if this guy could do it, I could do it. You know, and I mean, not to knock him, he's a genius, that guy, but just something about like watching that inspired me of like, I was like, that's what I want to do. I want to do that, you know? And so then I just remember having that idea in my head of like, that's what I'm going to do, and just being decisive about it. And I think that's important. It's just to be decisive as a director as well, you know?
Does it get hard, like, getting support from, I wouldn't say necessarily your friends, but, you know, people who know about what you do? Like, do you find it harder or easier that, you know, when you're trying to pitch something, like, hey, like, I'm premiering my film at this such and such. Like, do you find it harder, like, for people that you know to support you, or you get more support from strangers?
No, actually, I do think that a lot of friends and family have been supportive. We did three sort of test screenings around the New York area. One at the Bronx Museum, because they invited us to show our film last year, and that was the first time we showed it in public. We showed it one time in Manhattan at Anthology Film Archives, and then one time in Westchester, and each screening was pretty much packed or sold out. And so then, so I found that people were pretty supportive.
Nah, that's good. That's good. We're going to hit it off with the last question. What advice would you give your 15-year-old self?
That's a great question. Because my 15-year-old self... My 15-year-old self took a film class at the School of Visual Arts on the weekends, right? On Saturdays, I used to take an 8mm directing class because I was interested in film, and I took it with a couple of friends of mine. But when I first learned about filmmaking, I was like, whoa, this is extremely hard. This is way harder than anything I could imagine. And I think I was turned off from it, from like maybe going to film school or pursuing it immediately. But then what I didn't realize, and then what you only realize with age and wisdom, after starting an ironwork company and doing all kinds of other things, is everything's really hard. Like, whatever you're really pursuing, there's going to be some level of challenge. Otherwise, it's not really worth pursuing. So I think what I would tell my 15-year-old self is, yes, it is going to be hard. But don't worry about that. Embrace that.
Nah, that's dope, man. So let the people know when Trouble is coming out. Let them know where they can find you and all that good stuff.
So everybody can follow along with the movie at www.troublefilm.com.
And do you use the social media platforms?
Yeah, so we're on Instagram and Twitter, and everything connects from our website. So if they check out our website, then they could find us on social as well.
And let them know your name?
Zef Koda.
Thank you, Zef, for coming on to our podcast today. This was another episode of the Creative Hustle Podcast. Stay tuned for the next episode. Shout out to the listeners. We out.
Thanks, guys. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for coming.
Why you living? If you ain't taking action, why you bitching? Go ahead, tell me that I'm switching. Hard to stick together when you stick it to your mission. Like, not everyone's gonna make it. Opportunity ain't given, gotta take it. This for all my go-getters, working off no sleep. We don't know no better.
Hey, it's Mike. Thanks for listening to Creative Hustle. If you'd like to learn more about how we're highlighting the creatives we love, visit our website, creativehustleshow.com. You can also find us on the Bronx Brand app by downloading it in the App Store. Follow us on social media at Creative Hustle Show and support by sharing our content with your friends. We truly appreciate the support. Keep creating.